Hey everybody, this is Alex Merced from alexmerced.com, and I just wanted to kind of talk about some thoughts I had on my head, mainly, what is capitalism? Because I saw this post on Twitter where someone was like, well, capitalism is a system about infinite growth in a world of scarce goods, or on a planet of finite resources. So how can you have constant growth when there's finite resources? Which confuses so many things that it made my brain hurt. Because, like, it was in this post that says, mind blown. Like, this is some sort of profound realization. That one, that resources are scarce, and this assumption or assertion that this word capitalism implies persistent or constant economic or constant growth of consumption. And I mean, so what I want to do is just kind of parse this. Because at the end of the day, like, the word capitalism has become meaningless. And I find people who spend too much time defending the word capitalism or trying to, you know, fix the word capitalism, it just seems like a dying cause. Or just, because the word was never had a solid meaning to begin with. I mean, if I remember right, the word capitalism started as a pejorative. I think it was coined by Marx to refer to sort of his issues with sort of private enterprise and market exchange and things like that. Okay, it was always kind of meant as this sort of insult, saying, well, free exchange favors those who own things, you know, boo-hoo to them. Okay, but and that's the problem. Okay, so generally, like, if you're like a libertarian or someone who refers to themselves as a capitalist, you don't see capitalism as this, you know, hierarchical system. You're not thinking, okay, hey, this is a system, you know, that we like, where there's a hierarchy of those who own things and those who don't owe things. Like, we're thinking free exchange. We're thinking, okay, you have the ability to make anything you want, buy anything you want, and you have a role to convince someone voluntarily to exchange with you, which means by the power of your ideas, by the power of your persuasion, your power of your ability to produce value, you can lift yourself up. That's what we're imagining. But when you're talking to somebody from the left, and then they're reading, like, you know, Karl Marx and other communist literature, or socialist literature, or progressive literature, that's not what they're defining capitalism as. And this is where, like, a lot of the, and then again, then there's the economics discipline, which creates a whole other level of confusion. I'll get back to that. But generally, like, they're looking at capitalism as a system where, like, they're defining it as the hierarchy, in the sense that people who tend to own property, who own factories, own businesses, have more power than those who don't. Okay? And there, they're drawing this, like, fine line, where basically there's this fine line between people who produce their wealth through labor versus those who produce their wealth through capital, which there's a lot more overlap in reality. Like, there's a lot of people who own capital and labor to different degrees. Okay, yes, there's people who are sort of outliers, who have, like, zero capital and are able to earn meagerly on their labor. And then there's those who own extreme amounts of capital who literally don't work a day in their lives. Yes, there are people on the extremes, but the vast majority of people are not on those extremes. Okay, but they get sort of obsessed with sort of these polar points, these outliers, and use that to describe what have they sort of, they kind of superimpose that exaggerated distinction, this inequality between these two points, these outliers, and say, hey, this is just how society works. This is, and to them, that's what capitalism is. The creation of these two points. Okay, the sort of extreme capital owners, those who earn from capital versus those who earn from labor, and the different political power, economic power, social power, cultural power between them. And that's what they're focusing on. So the problem is, if you're coming at them and saying, well, capitalism is good because it's free exchange, that's just going to land on deaf ears, because that's not what they think capitalism is. They think you are defending that there is extreme poverty and extreme wealth. When generally, again, someone who's free market like myself we generally don't have an opinion on the distribution of wealth. We have an opinion on sort of the context of consent, the consent of choice, and the incentives that that creates. The distribution of wealth that occurs because of consensual choices and freedom is what it is. But the incentives are better, and we'll come back to that. But again, the point is, like, there's this difference in terms, because the word capitalism never had some sort of formal meaning. Again, it started as a pejorative term, as a wrapper around the criticisms. Okay, people try to take it back and or own it as, yes, we'll, you know, screw you, Marx, capitalism is awesome. Okay, and yes, free markets are awesome, enterprise is awesome. But again, there's a difference between sort of being for free markets and enterprise versus sort of what your average sort of left winger is thinking the word capitalism means. So then people will sit there and say, well, okay, how can we find sort of a neutral definition? So then they take a look at economics. And economics as a discipline has become so enwrapped with the idea of GDP. Okay, GDP being this metric created by Simon Kuznicks back in 1933. And the point of GDP wasn't to sit there and say, this is how we keep track of how good an economy is. The idea was to measure national income. Why does a country care about national income? It's because national income is a factor in national tax receipts. Okay, it doesn't necessarily mean the economy is better, worse, the same, etc. Okay, because that comes down to people's individual lives. Your life could be better off and you spent less, and your life could be worse off and you spent more. It's not clear cut. But it's important, if you're a national government, to have an idea of what the national income is if you are taxing income. Because it'll give you an idea of what your income as a government will be to for budgeting purposes. That's kind of what this is. That's kind of what the purpose of GDP was, in a sense. And the idea was just sort of an indicator, because the idea is, if there is more income, that should maybe be a sign of good, and less income may be a sign of bad. It's not inherently either. Okay? That's the problem. People take any change in GDP, they'd either be purely good or bad. The devil's in the details. Like, why did income fall? Why did income rise? Okay? And that's sort of the problem. It wasn't created to be sort of this benchmark of all things. Because let's explain how GDP works, gross domestic product. The idea is, if I spend the dollar, if I go and I buy a mouse, I spend $8 on a mouse, okay? Somebody out there made $8. So net-net, every dollar spent must be a dollar of somebody else's income. Okay? Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that the world is better off or worse off. Doesn't necessarily mean we've efficiently allocated resources necessarily. Doesn't necessarily mean we've produced more per se, because if I spend $8 on a mouse and then spend $3 on the same exact mouse in a different year, in 1 year GDP is less, even though I technically consumed the same resources. So it's not a perfect measure by any means. Okay, of what's going on in the real economy. But one reason why incomes may go up partly may be because of inflation. Okay, so you try to control for that through, you know, that's what real GDP tries to do. It tries to factor in inflation. There's other things you don't count. We're using all sorts of bits of information to try to capture how much spending there is. There's no perfect way to measure all spending, because not every business, you know, reports every dollar of income that they have and every dollar of sales that's occurred. Things don't perfectly match up, so it's, again, the data collection is going to be very imperfect. So it's not supposed to be taken as a sort of granular perfect number that says this is where the economy's at. But those issues are probably always the issue. So if you're measuring at two different points, you know, with the same imperfections, you can compare those two points to some extent and get an idea of direction. Get an idea of, you know, are incomes generally going up, or is the income as a nation generally going up? which has really little to no bearing on your individual life. You're, you know, I've actually seen that for some reason on the worst years is in the years where I generally have the biggest increases in income, because they always just have generally coincided with a career change. So it's but now all policy is constructed around this number, mainly because politicians use it as a bragging point. Okay, because now people say, when people say the economy grew 3%, they're saying GDP grew 3%, national income grew 3%. Doesn't mean your income went up 3%. Doesn't mean your life's any better. It just means in aggregate there was essentially 3% more spending, when all things are somewhat considered with imperfect information to the best of someone's ability. Okay. And that's a bragging point which can help you get votes. Okay. You want to be, you'd rather say, hey, GDP went up on your watch than GDP went down on your watch. So a lot of policy gets very geared towards this one specific number, towards these, because it's an easy metric to sit there and say the economy grew 3%, even though the economy is not a thing. Like, in the sense, like, there's no, like, economy that says, okay, this is the economy and I will for sure benefit if that thing is this size or that size. It's, there is a bunch of scarce resources, and then there is a context in which we all make decisions about how to allocate resources, and the better that context is, the better those resources will be allocated, and that will improve your life. Okay, if prices reflect actual amount of resources, so for example in 2020, due to a lot of the pandemic and the government reaction to the pandemic, things have gotten more expensive. But because things have gotten more expensive, you don't buy as much, so we don't run out of stuff. Because, again, because of supply chain shocks and all sorts of stuff, you can't make as much stuff as quickly. Yet we're not necessarily noticing that the shelves are quite as empty as they would have had prices stayed the same. Okay? Since prices can react to human behavior and context, resources get allocated better. That's the beauty of a pricing system. Not that everything is always affordable. Okay? Sometimes there's just not enough stuff. It's not going to be affordable. But the shortages won't be so bad, and prices will go down when needed, so we won't necessarily have huge abundances or surpluses of stuff just sitting around doing nothing. So that's the beauty of the pricing mechanism that occurs when you have individuals making choices. That's what a free marketer like myself wants. It's not GDP goes up. I could care less what GDP goes. If the pricing mechanism better allocates resources and people are free to make decisions so that way that pricing mechanism can work freely, I could really care very little about what GDP is doing. Okay? And also, if the government's doing very little, then that matters even less, because then you're not caring about what government receipts are. Now, the government does need an ever-growing economy. So yes, in today's, the way government policy looks at the economy and policy, yes, they are trying to create an ever-growing economy. But because we are in this sort of monetary cycle where basically we're constantly monetizing our national debt, so that only can sustain itself if GDP continuously goes up. Okay, so basically you create sort of inflation by creating more money, but you're hoping that the overall consumption, the overall velocity of that money increases by a little bit more than just the pure. So basically you're hoping that not only are people consuming, spending the extra dollars you printed, but that you've created a little bit more stuff than the dollars that you printed create. So like, that's like the hope. Okay, so that way you're kind of keeping up with a sort of self. But again, if the government had a balanced budget, didn't really care about, you know, having to inflate its away its debt, didn't have a debt, it would really not matter. Okay, it would really wouldn't. Okay, all that would be matter is that you have an income, you a job somewhere. Okay, and basic prices might generally be at a very stable level, so your income will go as far. And, you know, if you produce more, your income may go up. We now always assume that things have to go up for things to get better. Okay? And yes, but that has nothing to do with the number of resources, because a lot of it is you're playing around with, when you print money, you're not necessarily increasing, decreasing resources. Prices are, the economy, the GDP is going up because you've just increased you moved the decimal in a computer somewhere. But yes, but no, an actual world of free exchange with a free moving price system, you would actually manage those finite resources better, because when they become more finite, they would get more expensive, which would dissuade people from either consuming them or have them seek alternatives and create a profit motive to find alternatives. Okay, because hey, you know, if the price of oil is like $10 a gallon, then people are going to really want something cheaper. So everyone's going to be investing in trying to be the person who finds that cheaper alternative. There's a huge profit incentive there. When something gets expensive, you have a profit motive to do one of two things. Either find a better way to provide it so you can provide it cheaper, or two, find an alternative so that way you can provide something else that does the same thing at a cheaper price. Okay? Or make the thing obsolete. So actually three choices. So you can now not only discover an alternative, but discover a way to make the thing no longer necessary. But if the problem is, in politics, again, this always comes down to politics, people don't like it when prices go up. So people always employ politicians to prevent prices from going up. So those motivations, those incentives get dissipated, they get minimized. So then you don't necessarily have the same steering of investment towards those things that we really need as much, because the government's constantly manipulating the pricing system. But that's not free markets. That's not free exchange. It's not what me as a free marketeer is promoting. Getting back to my bottom line point, capitalism is a meaningless word. Okay, hopefully you have a better idea of what I mean when I talk about free exchange and the pricing mechanism and incentives and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, everyone who says the word capitalism means something different, whether they mean it's like, hey, we want a country that promotes business or free markets, which is not the same thing. Okay, because generally someone who's free market does not want the government sitting there and acting on the favor of business, because that also messes up the pricing mechanism. You know, a sort of, let's say, radical free marketeer like myself, bottom line is what makes markets work is the pricing mechanism. And the pricing mechanism only works when people are free to make choices based on real factors. They're not incentivized to buy more, they're not disincentivized to buy less, they buy purely, and they produce purely on the actual amount of resources and demand and context of the today's world, of actual supply and demand of resources and goods. Not through just sort of, you know, because the thing is that people are always creating incentives, like, you know, stores have sales, sources might raise their price. They'll disincentivize and incentivize you, but they're limited to do so by the resources that they have. Governments, not so much, since governments control money supply, so they can essentially spend as much money they want to change people's consumption behavior. The distortions to the pricing mechanism are that much more real and pervasive and perverse. Whew. Point is, the word capitalism doesn't mean anything. Let's be clear. I'm for free exchange of goods, services, of people's ability to associate with each other, of people to express themselves, okay? Because when we exchange ideas, when we exchange goods, when we exchange services, when we exchange value, when we exchange feelings, when we travel, these are the things that allow the pricing mechanism to work, but also enrich our lives. And that's what I'm promoting. That's what I'm fighting for. Not this idea that, you know, hey, the economy is this pie that's always growing. Woo! Okay, and well, there's an infinite amount of stuff. No one's saying that. Although, the irony is that people who point out that there's a finite amount of resources oftentimes promote the policies that often act like there isn't a finite amount of resources when they say, hey, let's just give everyone everything, okay, without anything to kind of mitigate, without any kind of way to balance out incentives and whatnot. And that's, the beauty of free exchange. You're constantly trying to figure out what's the most you can, you know, what's the balance between what you give and what you get. Because you can't get without giving. But if you give too much and don't get enough, then you're eventually not going to be able to give anymore. So you're constantly trying to figure this out. It's like a puzzle that's constantly figuring itself out. It's never quite perfect because the puzzle's constantly changing. That's the thing. People think that, like, hey, as a free marketer, I'm saying, hey, if we just go free market, everything's going to be, you know, unicorns and rainbows. No, it's going to be a constant struggle. Life is that, because we're constantly trying to discover better ways to do things, and things are constantly changing. The weather is changing, geography is changing, the architecture is changing, culture is changing, all these different contexts, pieces of the context are constantly changing. So constantly, how do we piece together our resources and how do we interact with each other is constantly changing. And that's why you need people to be free to make those decisions so they can adapt to that constantly changing world. Government policy tends to be very rigid. It tends to take a long time to change. And the more of how society works ends up there, the less adaptive society becomes, and the easier it is for it to collapse because it can't adapt when the situation changes. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that ramble from me. This is Alex Merced, alexmerced.com, if you want to go learn more. Join my Slack community so that way you can get updates whenever my new podcasts get posted or a new video on YouTube gets posted. Over there at alexmerced.com, you'll find the link to the Slack channel. Same thing in the Discord channel, so you can join either one and you'll get the updates. And then that's actually a really good way to reach me. Okay, I'm generally on Slack and Discord all day. So you can always kind of reach me there if you have any questions you'd like me to answer in a future podcast episode or whatnot. So you have a great day. Enjoy. My name is Alex Merced from alexmerced.com.